You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. I've got a little bit of an error here, a little mistake that I made last week. This issue, this episode that you're about to listen to, actually takes place between episodes 10 and episodes 11. As you know, or as you've heard, we've kind of broken these stories up into smaller bits. There's actually big chapter markers that are occurring. And last week's episode, episode 11, Into the Black Oak Woods, was supposed to be a new chapter in the story. And we're going to try to take these in-between chapters and explain a little bit more about what's going on with the game. And so in this episode, Rodrigo and I sit down and we talk about Paragon paths and why that might be important in your character building as you venture forth. So while this is episode 12, it really should have been episode 11, and I'll try to make sure that I keep my episodes straight in the future. So, Steven and Rodrigo are going to talk Paragon Paths, and we will talk with you next time on the Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. You know it as Critical Hit.
Well, we've started playing. You guys have gotten your first new level, so you guys are level 2 now.
Yes.
It.
We've picked some powers, too, as well. Mm-hmm.
You got your utility powers and a new feat.
Yep.
And from here on out, you know, new levels come, not all that quickly. Maybe every 3 sessions.
Really?
You might be able to level up.
So let me ask you then about this, because I was curious. I don't know how far you're planning out this adventure. It could go on forever, and if we do create this separate feat, obviously, it opens it up for this band of travelers to go out and do epic quests for eternity.
Right.
How often do groups form where that player does reach to the level, what is it, 70, level 30?
30 is the highest level gear.
Okay, so how often does that happen, and how long does it take for someone to reach those epic levels?
Well, I've never been part of a game that lasts that long. I think the longest game that I've ever been involved with maybe lasted a year and a half.
Really? How often did you play?
Every week to every other week. So
impressive.
Yeah. You know, obviously every once in a while things came up. Maybe we'd end up skipping 2 weeks for whatever reason. But then,
right.
You know, especially with that particular group, we always try to kind of make up for it and maybe have multiple
sessions
closer together to make up for the time.
Okay. But go ahead.
I know people who have been playing in the same freaking D&D game since they were 12.
Really?
Yep.
And they get together like every 6 months or something and play, or?
Or, you know, every week.
And it just takes that long to reach the next level?
No, well, there are lots of ways to do it. If you have such a long-running game, I've heard of people who are now playing the great-grandchildren of their previous characters.
And so they automatically inherit the... Do they inherit the stuff?
No, they start back at zero.
Oh, okay.
At first level.
Does it make you jealous, though, that we're having all the fun and you just sit there as the dungeon master?
No.
Have you ever been involved in a session where it's a rotating dungeon master? Like maybe Orym is stricken with a malaria for a session and they have to bring in another guy, which happens to be you, and then that guy says, I'm going to venture forth ahead, and I will see you in a few days, and miraculously Orym comes out of his funk and is able to continue on with everyone else.
I have seen that. Actually, Rob and D&D Brian are both kind of running this tag team campaign, and they that, you know, it's open for anyone to run. And basically they say, it's open for anyone to run, hint, hint. And that's what they're doing. Each one of them has a character, and when the other one's running, that other character comes in.
I see. Now, what happens? Is this one of those that go into the box, the magic sack or whatever, and they and he hides?
No,
or?
No, no. The way that the game is set up is the players are a group of mercenaries, essentially. Actually,
oh, okay.
Part of a small military unit. So when the boss comes in, he handpicks who he thinks will be best for the mission.
I see.
I.e., he handpicks the players, yeah, yeah, the characters of the players that are available.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. So in the, and for people who've been up to the majorspoilers.com website, you notice that Rodrigo, for a long, long time, and again, it depends on when you're listening to this and when we release this episode. Rodrigo's been writing this very lengthy, long build a character, character concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that you only take them up to level 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just say, well, up to level 11, that's about it for you. You're on your own.
Yep.
Why is that?
Because by the time you get to level 11, you will know what you like and what you don't like about the character, what you want the character to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to keep taking that character even further, you know, it might start to grate on you as a player, especially if you've been playing it from the very beginning.
Ah, okay.
You know, you might start to say, well, Rodrigo's choice here wasn't very good because I didn't know that you'd be fighting nothing but undead, for example.
Right, right, right.
You know, or that your dungeon master's like, no, I'm just not going to do skill challenges or
okay,
something like that.
That makes sense. That makes sense. But at some point, your character develops enough, and again, you'll always hear me, everyone, in this podcast, talk about World of Warcraft and things that happen on World of Warcraft. At a certain point, you start building specific skills,
mm-hmm,
and you start getting points that you can spend on certain traits.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're, and forgive me, it's been a while since I played, but if I'm a warlock or a mage, and let's say I want to go down fire spec, I can spend all these points and I can build up into this very powerful flame-throwing behemoth that can take out a whole crowd of people at one time, or I might go, I don't know, healing spec, or I might go, you know, what is it, ice or frost,
mm-hmm,
frost mage or whatever. Is that the same thing that can happen here in Dungeons & Dragons?
It's similar. Most of your options aren't so limited as, say, working with only one element. There are a couple paragon paths kicking around.
Okay, what's a paragon path?
When you reach level 11, your character picks a paragon path. This path is usually class-specific, but sometimes not. There are paragon paths who say, for example, if you have any martial class, you can qualify for it. So, or any arcane class. So if you pick a paragon path that qualifies any arcane class, that means that Smith, Randus, or Orym would all qualify for it since they're all arcane spellcasters.
Okay, I see. So,
but what it is it's a more specific, kind of more flavorful version of your class.
All right, so these paragon paths, mm-hmm, who am I here? I forget what this is. A Blood Moon Stalker.
Right.
Druid.
Right.
Let me just read you a little bit about these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Several legends tell of the Blood Moon, a night or sometimes a season when the primal beast stalks the wilderness of the open and physical form. During the Blood Moon, the predators of the world are said to be more dangerous and have an insatiable hunger. According to some legends, the Blood Moon is a perversion of the world's natural state, brought about by the gods or by the fierce response of the primal spirits into some violation of their precepts. Let's see. Through the power of the Blood Moon, you and your spirit brothers, sisters, and ancestors are the custodians of the world! So you could be you could have a Blood Moon action that happens at 11. When you spend an action point, you take an extra action. You could be a Blood Moon Hunger. When you reduce an enemy to 0 hit points with a melee or a close attack, you can use your second wind as a free action.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, or you could be Frenzied Claws. While you're in beast form, you can score a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20.
Well, those aren't options. Those are things you get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At level 11, the game, at levels 11 and 21, the game takes a big leap up.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
You basically, at level 11, get a bucket of new things to do.
Wow.
It's like being level 1 all over again, in a sense.
Wow. So we need to figure out what Orm should probably be searching for at some point.
Right. And there are a couple options. Do you have the Forgotten Realms guide?
I have the Player's Handbook 2. What are you looking for? Eberron?
No, Forgotten Realms. Do you have it? Guess not.
No, I don't think
so. It's all good.
All right.
But just in the Player's Handbook in the original, why don't you go ahead and grab the Arcane Power, since I don't think...
Oh, that's the one I was looking for.
Yeah. So here's a couple options for a Paragon Path for Orm.
Okay.
One of them is Battle Mage, which sounds like kind of what you originally wanted for.
Right.
The Battle Mage does a little bit of pushing around. He can cash in his spells to heal himself and do other things like that.
Right.
The other thing that I thought Orm might want to look at is the Wizard of the Spiral Tower class.
Ooh, that sounds fancy.
Yeah. What that does is it allows you to use your sword as an implement. And you could still use your wand, but you can use the sword as an implement. And when you reach level 11 and take the first level of this class,
yeah,
it says that you can use any implement powers that you know through your sword. So you'd be able to use your Wand of Accuracy through your sword.
Oh, cool.
So it would essentially mean that Orm has learned to channel his magic instead of through a wand, through his sword.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that way, if my sword or magic helmet got damaged, my wand and magic helmet, then I would be able to, you know, use my sword. Or just use the sword. Now, would I be able to do double damage? Like if the sword... I mean, any sword. Let's say I get a long sword that has a plus 10 to killing.
Yes.
And so suddenly, if I'm able to use my arcane powers through that, my fire wand power, suddenly right. I get a plus 2 on top of that, for example.
No, not usually. It would still be used as an implement,
right.
So you don't get that...
plus 10 to killing?
You would get the plus 10 to killing if that was the enhancement that the magic, that the power, that the sword gets.
Yeah.
You don't get the proficiency bonus to your magic attacks with it. So,
okay.
You know, weapons have that little bump to,
right.
To attack bonus.
So what would be the benefit then if I can't get the 2-in-1 action going there?
Well, first off, you'd be able to take Wizard of the Spiral Tower powers,
okay.
Which, you know, you'd be taking any prestige class, so whatever works.
Okay.
The other thing that helps out with it is that you would only really then have to focus on your sword as opposed to, say, trying to have a magic wand and a magic sword.
Okay.
Really, as far as...
Can I use a shield or anything like that then? Does that free up a hand?
Yeah, I think
that?
you'd be able to use a shield. You'd have to get proficiency with it. You'd have to take a feat to be proficient in the shield. But yeah, you could.
Okay. Now, but see, when the thing was, I think whenever we created Orm... either the Arcane Power book had not been released yet, or I had not got my hands on it, because as we talked about in one of the previous episodes, I'm kind of keen on these summoners, where all of a sudden, behold, here is a beastie to fight my battles for me.
Yep.
But it's too late for me to go down that path, right?
No.
Because, you know, in the creation, there's a whole bunch of summoner wizard things, some very, well, I guess... No, I guess I can do that, right?
Yeah.
That's only just a path, right? So all these other level 1 spells and level 1 encounter things, I can add those on later on.
Yeah.
First off, it doesn't screw me later. So people who are listening, they can choose a path later on.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a difference between a build and a paragon path.
Okay.
Your build is just the powers you pick.
Right.
And your paragon path factors into that.
Right.
Your paragon path is just the powers you take from level 11 through 20.
Yeah, because the only... Here's what it says for bonded summoner. The prerequisite is only wizard. It doesn't say you have to be down a certain path. You're fascinated by the magic summoning and conjurations. The power of the plane draws you almost as strongly as your own arcane strength pulls the creature you call to your side. You form a stronger link than others with the creatures you summon, granting you increased control over them. The closer communication even allows you to manipulate the boundaries between the planes. Ooh. You are a good master, and you imbibe the summoned servants with greater vitality in exchange for even more dedicated service. So I can create a planar gateway, an enduring summons, summon bonded protector. Ooh, that guy sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and from here on out, you can start picking, especially because the big summoning powers are dailies.
Mm-hmm.
At level 3, you'll get another encounter power, and at level 5, you get another daily power. So at level 5, you can pick a summoning power, and if you want, next level, you can always retrain.
Ah, okay.
Are you familiar with retraining?
Does that cost you anything?
It costs you whatever you're swapping out.
Ah, okay.
Basically, you can retrain. Every level, you can retrain one thing. Either a feat, a power. Actually, it might just be feats and powers. But you can say, if you're like, you know what? I never use this melee training. I don't actually want to use my sword from here on out if you decided to do that. Then when you hit level 3, you could say, I would like to switch this out for improved initiative.
Okay.
And that's that. You could always just take the feed later at a later level. You could always swap it back at another level. The important thing is that each level you can only retrain one thing.
Yeah. Now, in World of Warcraft, you pay money and you can retrain.
Right.
But here we're not really based on that kind of an economy. So I've got a couple options. I can be a rhyme tongue caller.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to have primordial language, and I don't have that.
Well, you can always pick it up.
It could be a hermetic saboteur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are lots of options. And the important thing is to think, where do you see Orym going? Where do you want him to go? Do you want him to be like a crazy illusionist? Or do you want him to just call down the fire from the heavens?
Well, but I'm thinking, and this is my thinking, and the same reason why I was thinking it from Warcraft,
mm-hmm.
is that, as we've seen in past episodes, Orym is not that great. He doesn't have a high armor class. It's mm-hmm. only like 14. And so there were times, and especially in the Crescent Moon saga that we had,
mm-hmm.
where they jumped us in the covered wagon area, where Orym was pretty much dead, unless I had not been stabilized. Orym would have been out.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory in these kinds of creatures, ones that have a low armor class, if I can summon something to fight for me,
mm-hmm.
I get 2 attacks, right?
No.
Oh, I still don't get 2 attacks. I can't say I cast my flaming wand and my summoner goes and kills that guy.
No.
You can't?
Nope.
Man, that's...
The way that summoned creatures work is you take a standard action to cast it. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, when the creature first comes in,
mm-hmm.
it makes an attack.
Okay.
So you get that going. Then after that, the creature does 2 things. It takes up space and obeys your commands.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they also get opportunity attacks if something is triggered. But basically, you spend your action saying, you there, thing, move over there and attack that thing.
Ah, okay. So, for example, my bonded protector. The effect is you summon a large bonded protector in an unoccupied 2-square by 2-square space within range. So he's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
The bonded protector has a reach of 2 and a speed of 5. It has a +4 bonus to AC and a +4 bonus to will. So that goes to me.
No.
Oh, that goes to him.
Your bonded creature has all of your defenses and skills and attack bonuses.
So if he dies, do I die?
No.
Okay.
No. You don't share anything.
Okay.
But it has the same stats as you.
I can give him the following special commands. A standard action, a mm-hmm. close blast. Targets each creature in the blast, obviously. An opportunity attack, a melee, targets 1 creature. Let's see, bonded protector can make this opportunity attack against a creature that attacks you or that attacks a creature you summoned.
Mm-hmm.
And then a minor action, you are bonded, you and the bonded protector swap positions. I'm not going to say it.
And you are doing so well.
So I have to use one of my standard actions mm-hmm. to tell him to go and do something.
Yep.
Oh, that sucks. I thought I would get so we've been playing Magic the Gathering also.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I summon up a little guy that creates another guy, mm-hmm. a little +1/+1 whatever, I can use that as an attack.
Mm-hmm.
And the original creature as an attack.
Yep. Well,
why can't I do that here?
Because,
Wizards of the Coast.
You are talking about 2 completely transcendentally different games.
But see, the cool thing in World of Warcraft, you got to play this game, Rodrigo. I think you'd get a kick out of it.
I don't think I do.
But see, I can say, Voidwalker, go attack those guys over there while I kick the crap out of this guy over here.
Sure. And if you think about it, that's what your Flaming Sphere does. It just kind of sits there and goes boom, 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 boom. And then anybody who gets close gets attacked.
Right.
Your summon creatures get attacks of opportunity. Your summon creatures can move around along with you.
So this is just a big arm.
It's a big arm. And it's something else to place on the battlefield.
Forget it. I'm not going down that path. No, if he can't be a separate entity that I control as my little puppet, then it's to me it's not... From what I'm seeing and from what you're describing,
It just doesn't appeal to you.
That does not no longer appeal to me.
Cool.
So Bonded Summoner is out as my Paragon path.
Okay.
So tell me about this this guy again, my Magic Spire guy.
Wizard of the Spiral Tower?
Yes.
Okay. The cool thing about the Wizard of the Spiral Tower is that you can essentially become as opposed to being a wand wizard or an orb wizard or a tome wizard, you become a sword wizard.
Aha.
You get attacks that trigger off of you using a sword. You essentially can use your wand of accuracy through your sword. And it allows weird things like if you have a magic sword that has an item power that triggers off of an attack, you can sometimes, in a weird way, use it at range because you have ranged attacks.
So what if my sword, and I don't know if there's such a sword, I'd have to look in the adventurer's vault, but is there such a sword that actually, on a critical strike, boosts up my protection or something?
Your defense?
Yeah, my defense.
There is a sword that just straight up boosts up defense, I think.
Yeah, but something that... okay, so if I use the sword, it would boost my defense, and I could use the Wand of Accuracy spell as well, right? All in the same go?
Yeah, as long as that's the way the sword worked, yeah.
Okay. What else happens with my...
Well,
With this character, if I so choose to go down that path?
At 11th level, you get an attack. It's 2 weapon plus intelligence modifiers damage. You make a secondary attack.
Oh, so I get 2 attacks.
Uh-huh. For that one power. And then if you hit with your second attack, the target is dazed until the end of your next turn, and the power is not expended. So you can keep using that attack.
So
as long as you hit on that secondary attack.
Is that like Torque's double strike?
Where
Torque's, he can hit 2 people at the same time?
No, that's 2 attacks against the same target.
Oh, okay.
Basically what it does is I strike at thee with my sword and you actually stab the guy, right? Mm-hmm. And then you channel magic through it and that's the secondary attack.
Okay, all right, cool. And so I have 2 separate rolls then.
Yes.
For that. So I roll once for the sword attack to see if I stab you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I do stab you, I roll again.
Mm-hmm.
So only on a hit, or is it only on a critical hit that this second power...
No, only on a hit... On a hit on the second attack, the power is not expended.
No, but I mean so I got to roll once to see if I stab you.
Right.
If I miss, do I get the secondary attack? Okay, so I have to hit you the first time.
Yep.
Okay. If I hit you, I roll again to see if my secondary power kicks in, which is this jolt of whatever flaming stuff down my magic sword.
Mm-hmm.
I roll to see if that hits you. If I do hit you... You're stunned, meaning you can't do anything this whole next go-around for the next 6 seconds.
Right.
Right? And then I get to use that power again so that when it comes back to my turn, I can roll to strike you with the sword. If I hit you with the sword, I get a roll again for a secondary power. If I hit you again, you remain stunned, and you keep losing hit points for however many hit points there are that I roll.
Correct.
All right.
Rinse and repeat.
Yes. That sounds like a pretty awesome power.
It is a strong
power.
But
the problem is... Again, going back to armor class, if I miss, I'm right next to you. So if you are someone that's a thief or a whatchamahoos-it with a little sword, I'm right there within your within your close attack.
Correct.
Okay, but if I'm 10 feet away, 20 squares away, whatever it is, and I've got a ranged attack, again, to me that feels a little bit better than the close combat.
Sure.
So it's a risk that I have to take by going down this path.
Well, look at it this way. Instead of... being all like zap, zap, zap from afar, and then when somebody gets up close to you, flailing around screaming.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Exactly. You can go, ha ha, have at thee with my awesome
attack.
That's
true. So it can be double bonus.
Right. Your Paragon powers only give you 3 powers out of the like 12 that you're going to have by then.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm just concerned that, it's like kind of like... Oh, father, I would like to go to school and learn to become a computer engineer. No, you're going to go to school and learn to become a shoe cobbler.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get forced to go down the shoe cobbler route, and I never learn how to run a computer. right? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm afraid is in these Paragon paths, you kind of get funneled down this particular direction that kind of eventually closes you off from exploring other opportunities. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Where I would hate to say, okay, I'm going to start working my way to this.
You can't. Here's the thing.
Sword magic helmet guy. That's what I'm going to call it. The sword and magic helmet.
The sword path. And helmet helmet path. Here's the thing. You have to pick a paragon path. When you hit level 11, you pick a paragon path.
Yeah.
It's your cool haircut. It's that moment when you're no longer a grunt. You are this guy that actually stands out from every other wizard.
Yeah.
And in my game, say if you went with Wizard of the Spiral Tower, even though you might meet other wizards, you probably will never meet another Wizard of the Spiral Tower. That'll be your thing. That'll be the thing your character does.
Oh, okay. All right.
So no matter what you pick, you know, I, as a game master, I'm going to work to make you feel special and to make your character play special.
And so I would continue on down this path to, what is it? What's the next one? 22?
To level 21.
21.
But all this does is it gives you these three things that you can do
mm-hmm.
with your action points.
Which usually. Is an extra thing.
Yeah, which is just a bonus that you're going to get no matter what Paragon path you go with. The bonuses are different, but no matter what, you'll get three big bonuses.
Right.
Then at a level 11, you get another attack.
Mm-hmm.
At level 12, and then once you hit level 20. But between 12 and 20, you keep taking wizard powers.
Yeah, yeah. So I still get my ranged attacks.
You
and
still
I get
all your wizard attacks.
Double pumps or whatever that we mm-hmm. got going and... Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to trade anything out for a Paragon path.
Okay, all right.
It's
so
just
I'm not
something
losing
that you
anything,
get.
It's just an enhancement.
That's
it's
right.
It's the fins on the back of my Chevy.
It is, in fact.
All right.
Possibly the flux capacitor on the back of your DeLorean.
What would be the advantage of going through one of these time and space wizards?
Like the Wayfarer?
Yes, the Wayfarer.
Well, if you say, you know what I like about Orym? I like his ability to teleport. The Wayfarer gives you a little bit more teleport action.
Of course, the bad thing is I might be, in considering the current circumstances, I might say, hey, whenever last time I did a jump, something really freaky happened.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, maybe that's not the path I want to go down.
Well, and it's important for us to talk about this and for you to realize that in character, you know, Orym experiences this horrible thing, but it actually has no bearing statistically.
True.
So as a player, you should always consider it.
Psychologically, it. Hurts his character.
That's right. And that's something that you can roleplay.
Whenever you score, this is the Arcane Wayfarer. Whenever you score a critical hit with a wizard attack power, you can also teleport the target 4 squares. So that's like a big old thunder wave attack almost.
Mm-hmm.
If I get a critical hit. That's pretty rare.
But that's not an attack in and of itself. That's
right. That's a bonus.
Anytime you crit, you can do that.
So I can. This is basically just teleporting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
Okay.
I think I'm gonna go with. I've got the magic sword and helmet.
Okay.
You gotta get me a magic helmet though.
I will do my best to get you a magic helmet.
Okay. All
right. So now we got this, but let's talk about something else.
Okay.
There is a class, a whole class, called Sword Mage.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are defenders. They're essentially what Torque are. They're in the Forgotten Realms guide. We don't have them here. But there are options for Sword Mage. There are options for Sword Mages in Arcane Power.
Okay.
You can take feats that will allow you to take Sword Mage powers, which will make you a little bit more swordy and still magical. It's something to think about.
Okay.
You might want to look through Sword Mage powers and see if anything appeals to you, and we can talk about it. You'd essentially be multi-classing into Sword Mage.
All right. And I'm just trying to flip through here. And so that gives me some, like you said, some additional sword powers.
That actually, the thing about multi-classing is that you are then trading maybe some punch from your character for versatility.
Okay.
You would actually take feats that do nothing for you except allow you to take these extra powers.
Yeah, maybe I'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd go down that path.
Okay.
Yeah, my parents. I teach them a thing or two.
Well, and here's the deal. Like I said, you know, it's possible that no other Eladrin has ever, you know, because all Eladrin learn to use a sword.
Right.
And they learn to use a wand or an orb or whatever.
Right.
If they're wizards. But none of them ever said, hmm.
Yeah. Well, in your world.
Sure.
That brings up the other thing that I get so disappointed about. I'm going to get so attached to this character.
Mm-hmm. That when I ultimately murderize him in the night, you're going to cry?
Well, no, but at the end of the adventure,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, hey, I really had fun with you guys. I want to take my character and go play with those guys and see what happens when I go and play, when Orm goes and plays in their world.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not allowed to do that, are you?
Well, it's up to that other game master.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
You're not allowed to import characters into my games, but you're allowed to export them because they're your characters.
How come?
Because I don't like it. Because I don't want somebody to come in and say, like, well, because I don't want my game to turn into, well, in Jimmy's game,
yeah.
this happened.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is just like when my character did this in Bob's game.
Mm-hmm.
I want my games to be this completely unique experience. And that's why I usually, you know, rap people on the head when they're like, hey, can I play my barbarian that I've been playing since I was 10?
It'd be pretty awesome.
No, it wouldn't. It mm-hmm. would actually be awful.
I think it's interesting to see the dynamics, though, when you go mix it up with other players.
Yeah. But getting into a new game
yeah.
is this fantastic opportunity to create a brand new character.
It's a crossover event, just like in comic books.
Sure.
Savage Dragons crosses over into Spider-Man's world.
That's right. And those are always so great, make so much sense, and totally canon, right?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
At least one of them gets to say Excelsior.
Right.
All right, so I guess that's your rules, and if you're going to play in Rodrigo's pool, that's the rules you got to play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens if we're playing Tag Team Dungeon Master?
If we set up and we're like, okay, we're going to play a Tag Team Dungeon Master game, it wouldn't be in this game.
No. Oh, okay.
We'd have to sit down and decide, okay, Steven, what do you want this game to be?
Yeah.
And then you'd be like, well, I want these guys to essentially be like, just live in a cave. Mm-hmm. Like, they're trapped in this cave and they're trying to get out. Like, okay, then you and I would build this world and we'd figure out why characters were able to slip in and out.
Right, right.
And then we'd just go from there.
Okay.
When you're doing a joint dungeon master thing, you really have to just communicate a lot and essentially make sure that both people
are in control.
So if it
was my turn to be a dungeon master and a guy came, hi, can I bring in my level 32 barbarian? I wouldn't be able to go, oh, sure, bring him on in.
Well,
and then next time when it's Rodrigo's turn, I banish thee to the outfield.
It would cause problems. However, if you were to, say, run your own game, and it was just Steven's game,
yeah, but see,
you could
I
do whatever you want.
I want to bring Orm into that game and let him play with the level 30 barbarian and the level 2 dwarf
mm-hmm.
and the level 1 gnome,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't be able to.
That's
unless
right.
Unless it was that Dungeon Master's prerogative. And since you're the only Dungeon Master I know,
it happens.
Orm better hope that he never dies.
That's right.
And he better hope that you better start developing some level 70 adventures. Because Orm's going to be around for a long, long time.
I have arcs. This is something important, and this is something that I meant to talk to you guys. I'm not pulling any punches. It's entirely possible that in the duration of this game, Orm will die.
No! And then what? I have to either create a new character, or I'm just out for the rest of the time?
Oh, no, you wouldn't be out for the rest of the thing. You'd create a new character.
No!
Or
resurrect.
If you are high definitely. Enough, if one of the party is high enough level to cast a resurrection ritual, then you might be able to come back.
Man, because you know, in World of Warcraft,
yeah, you just like your ghost just walks up and you
have to run all the way back to your body,
right?
And then jump back in and get up.
Yep. Not so in Dungeons and Dragons. Death is a lot more permanent. Not necessarily completely permanent, but a lot more permanent.
All right. I think we're going to end it there, everybody. We kind of know which direction Orm's going. Hopefully you kind of know a little bit about these Paragon paths. If you want to read more about it, I suggest you pick up your player's guide, your player's
handbook.
Guide 2, or sorry, your player's handbook, your Arcane Power handbook, or your player's handbook 2,
right.
as it contains a lot of that information. And I suppose some people who are out there wanting to do the dungeons and the Dragon's Master, Dungeon Master stuff, does it talk about that in there as well? Helping players choose?
Yeah, the Dungeon Master's Guide does.
All right, so we've gotten you to spend at least another $35 this episode.
Cha-ching.
Wizards of the Coast. You can write us a check at any time.
We'll take it.
All right, that wraps it up. If you want this to appear as a separate podcast feed, and if you are interested in subscribing to it, All you have to do is drop us an email at podcast@majorspoilers.com.
Now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.